What if Ebenezer Scrooge was an atheist and he had a ghostly visit from someone? Let's talk about that coming up next, right here on The Right Stuff. Stay tuned.
The only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to this edition of The Right Stuff. I am so glad you are here with me today, the queen of Tuesday nights. I want to thank all of you for supporting me last week for my 5th year anniversary of being the queen. I had such a great time listening and just reminiscing about the years that we've all been working together. I can't believe it's been that long. And guess what? Some of you have been with me since the very first show back in 2013, and I'm really excited about today's show because it's Christmas in July, in a way, apologetic style, and I can't wait to dig down deep into our book. This is a book recommendation from Peter Younghusband from Christian Speculative Fiction Guru. This is a recommendation from him, and so I'm so excited to have with us today our guest co-host and contributor, Steve Lovering, and we'll be talking to him in just a few moments. Got to tell you, you know, most of you celebrated with me as I put out my 10th release. Guess what, guys? I'm putting out my 11th release on Friday of this year, of this month, rather. This Friday, July 13th, will be the publication of my 11th release. It's called Lantern of Faith. For those of you who really enjoyed the Silver Pine series and my edition, Wanted Man of Honor, guess what? Lantern of Faith is coming up. And so if you really like sweet historical fiction, you'll definitely love Lantern of Faith. If you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag Right Stuff, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages.
On The Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction. Speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
Night, Parker J and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome. Welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WTKC 104.5. Again, so very glad you're here with me. We are going to have such a wonderful time. Most of you know that I am definitely an advocate of apologetics. And you all know my story of how I got into apologetics. And it came from a discussion several years ago with an atheist around 3 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the morning, because only questions about God will have you standing outside of your work, of your midnight place when you're ready to go home and start talking about these types of things. And so that atheist at the time had asked me questions that I did not have answers to. And it was that atheist who actually got me into apologetics, and I started to eat up apologetics. From there, I ended up joining the Christian Apologetics Alliance for a time, and I still consider myself an unofficial member of that group. Actually, the show's statement of faith follows the Christian Apologetics Alliance, but I find apologetics being highly essential to understanding some of the biggest questions of life, and this is no exception with the question of God's existence. Does God exist? The implications of the answer to that question have ramifications beyond anything we could possibly believe. Because if God doesn't exist, then where do we find our purpose? If he does exist, why aren't we doing anything about that purpose? And that's just one aspect of God's existence. If God exists, what does it have to do with me? What does it have to do about how I live my life? Does it matter what I do with my life? If God exists, what type of God is he? I mean, these are so many different things that are attributed to the question of God's existence. And what better way than to use a classic tale of redemption than A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens? But we did something different. Steve Loring, our guest co-host and contributor today, did it apologetic style. One of the things that really titillated me about this book was seeing the review from Dr. Paul Mayer, and he is an author of the book A Skeleton in God's Closet. About the time I started to get into apologetics, his book was one of the first fiction books that was apologetically bent that I read, and I love that book, A Skeleton in God's Closet. It was phenomenal, and so I'm really excited to host Steve today. And without further ado, let's introduce Steve Loring. Steve, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Parker, for having me on the show.
And thank
and
you
I,
so much
I,
for
taking it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know until you mentioned it right now that you had read Dr. Myers' A Skeleton in God's Closet, so I'm extra excited that we have that in common as well.
Oh, I love that book. That book, literally edge of your seat, entertainment, thriller, and just the implications of finding a skeleton in God's closet. That book was so well written. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, what's going on here? Because, and for our listeners out there, I'm not going to give anything away, but basically they found a tomb. I want to say it right, it's been a while, but they found a tomb, and the tomb would have been the tomb of Christ. But, quote unquote, they found a skeleton there, something like that. It's been a minute since I read it, Steve, but it was something like that. And so they were doing all these tests to make sure. And the way Dr. Mayer had put that book together was so well. I read the second one too. I think it was called More Than a Skeleton. And then he did the third one, starts with C, not the Corinthian. It's the third one.
The Constantine Codex. Yes.
Thank you. The Constantine Codex. I have not read that one yet. But when I read A Skeleton in God's Closet, oh my gosh. If you guys want to get a book on par with Steve's book today, you definitely want to get that book too, A Skeleton in God's Closet. But this book here, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence, I think this is going to just titillate you. And I can't wait to delve into it. But people may be asking, you know, who in the world is Steve Loring? So go ahead and tell us about yourself in your own words, Steve.
Sure. Well, I'm married and I have three kids. And as you and I were discussing before the show, I live here in Michigan. I'm an author, of course, and very important to me, I'm a lay teacher of Christian apologetics at my local church. As you mentioned, I wrote this book called Scrooge and A Question of God's Existence, which is an adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. But it's bent, or its goal is to help people deal with doubts about God and the Christian faith. So I'm writing it from a Christian worldview. The book has opened some doors for me. I've had a chance to speak about the book and about the big questions in life at Concordia University in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and on some radio programs, including Issues, Etc., and the Eric Metaxas Show.
That's the thing about these type of questions, though. People ask them. I remember I recently saw a Facebook post of a friend of mine I used to work with, and the young lady made a comment. She said, I wish there was no such thing as religion. You know, let's just get rid of it. I wish there was no such thing as it. And she said some more things that I can't remember, but I can tell behind her was just this frustration thinking, oh, it's religion's fault that we're having all these type of problems. I said, no, it's not religion's fault. People create problems because of the very nature of people. Our sinful nature creates problems. That's why a question like the existence of God exists, because people start to realize, you know what? If people are hurting people, cheating people, lying to people, destroying relationships, destroying empires, destroying ethnic groups, then what's the purpose for all of this? So these are one of the reasons why these questions come into play. My mother said to me like this, Steve, and you can let me know what you think about this. My mother said, God placed in us a God-sized hole that only he could fill. What do you think about when I say something like that? Do you agree with that? What would you add to that to give it a clearer context?
Yeah, that's very well put, and I think that would kind of fall in the category of an intuitive argument for the existence of God. You know, C.S. Lewis said something similar, that we have in us a desire for which nothing on this earth can satisfy, and the only reasonable explanation is that we were made for another world. It's similar to what I think the point your mother was making, and so yeah, I would say that is one of many very reasonable arguments for the existence of God, and that has an extra nice appeal. I consider it to be a nice appeal because it's simple. That means people can, you know, pick it up and intuitively grasp it on the first take.
I'm very much interested in your journey to faith, so go ahead and tell us how that looks.
Sure. Well, I was raised a Christian by Christian parents, and I'll be perfectly honest with you, I can't remember a time when I wasn't identifying as a Christian. And but that said, I grew up, and as I grew older, I encountered, you know, questions that I didn't have good answers for. And so those doubts were always there. I didn't lay down my faith at any point. But I would certainly say that as I grew older, I would often use those doubts to hold my faith loosely, and kind of hold my faith loosely and not really live according to God's good purposes for my life. But it was really through Christian apologetics, and especially people like C.S. Lewis that I already mentioned, and others like Dr. William Lane Craig and Dr. Paul Meyer, who we've already brought up, that I was able to get some reasonable answers to these questions that plagued me. And it really changed me. I had been a Christian. I remained a Christian. But what it really did was it emboldened me. And it also took away a lot of excuses that had been there to stop living my faith more courageously, more boldly. So I was inspired through the apologetics to live my faith, to continue to learn more, and then also to share what I was learning.
That's what I love about apologetics. When you start to get into it, you get to the part in Scripture where he says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your body, with all your strength. And then he says, with all your mind. And for me, when I got into apologetics, it wasn't just a blind faith, not that it ever had been, but it was a faith that was rooted in reality, that there was logical processes behind my faith, that it wasn't just, oh, I believe in God because I was taught to believe in God. As a matter of fact, when the atheist that I mentioned earlier, when he challenged me, there were certain things that he had challenged me on that I had not been taught, that when I started to get into apologetics, you kind of learn how to hone your arguments. You begin to see if someone's actually making a legitimate argument or if they're just, blowing smoke, And what happens is that apologetics actually trains your brain to think. Now, mind you, at the end of the day, an encounter with Christ is a spiritual thing. Don't get me wrong. But having the arguments and the logic behind those arguments to help answer those questions that someone may ask you as a Christian, it just really firms up your faith. That's kind of like why apologetics for me was such a really big deal. And when, like, the people I gravitated towards when I got into apologetics, Steve, was Ravi Zacharias. I did do some of WLC. I did some about Frank Turek, Lee Strobel, Hank Hinegraaff. I did a couple of lay apologists, such as the Poached Egg with Greg West. Then I got to the Christian Apologetics Alliance. I listened to some of, I never say their name right, Ratio Christie. Some of those people, then some of my Facebook friends who are lay apologists, I started to listen to them. And it became just a breeding ground for learning how to love the Lord with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind. And then the Lord works on the heart. So you can always have an answer to a question, but it's still the Lord working on your heart, which is why some people can become a little bit arrogant sometimes because they're so firmed up in the logic part, they forget that it's not just about logic. It's not just about reality. And so that's how it was for me as I got into apologetics, you know, and you said how apologetics helped you. So you kind of answered that. My next question was, how did you come involved in apologetics? You kind of answered that already. So my next question is this: what is the question of God's existence? I'm sorry. Why is the question of God's existence one of the most important questions an individual can ask themselves?
Well, yeah, I think you put it very well at the beginning of the show, when you brought up the issue of purpose in life. If there is no God, where do we get our purpose from? And if we make it up ourselves, the phrase "make it up" kind of implies that it's something that's not real. All right, so having purpose in your life is super important, and you brought that up. So I think you made that point very well. I would also bring up a couple other things. People live their lives as if there are these moral realities or moral laws. I'm trying to say that bind everybody. And they're objective in that sense. They're not up to the individual to decide. Well, if it's not up to any individual to decide, who is the moral lawgiver? Who is the moral law enforcer? And if there is no God, what again about those moral laws makes them real and binding? And if we break them, what difference does it make if there's no moral law enforcer? So the whole existence of binding morality is, I believe, also hinged on the existence of God. And that's something that's talked about. The existence of God being a linchpin for purpose, meaning, and morality are themes that come up in the book quite a bit.
You hit it on the nail, Steve. I definitely agree with you because these implications of God's existence really do have these widespread ramifications. They really do. And why we have to tackle these things is, unlike my friend who I love very dearly, but unlike her, she's like, just get rid of it. I said, the fact that you can even say that lets you know there's more to it than just that, because you do recognize that something is wrong. You recognize that there is something wrong in the world. Why do you recognize that? And as Ravi Zacharias would say, because you feel pain. Pain is an indication that something is wrong. If we did not have pain, we would not know that something was wrong. And I love that example because some of us have been hurt by people in the church, and people in the church have made us walk away from God because they've been hurt us, because we understand the reason why we hurt is because something is wrong. And that pain leads us right back to God. But some of us say that pain leads me away from God. But when we come back from our break, we're going to delve deep into this thing about apologetics, because apologetics is a core element of this book. If you want to ask Steve a question, you know you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag RightStuff, with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
The glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The SpecFaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com. Exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
The award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers. Sormac Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. Sormac Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, Sormac Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on sormag.com or order a print issue on magcloud.com. If you would like more information about Sormag Digital, check us out on sormag.com or contact us at sormag@yahoo.com. Sormag Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers.
Speculative Fiction, the Untold Podcast, produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
The Queen of Tuesday Night, Parker J. and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. Again, the Queen of Tuesday Night. So glad to be talking to you today. We are talking about Scrooge and the question of God's existence. And those of you who know me, you know I love apologetics, and this is right up our alley. And with my guest co-host, Steve Loring, he is the author of the book Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence, with a wonderful endorsement by Dr. Paul Mayer, author of A Skeleton in God's Closet. If you want to get into apologetic fiction, this is the book for you, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. And then go ahead, after you finish that, pick up A Skeleton in God's Closet. Let me tell you, you are going to love both of these stories. Again, I want to thank Peter Younghusband for his recommendation for having Steve onto the show. Because one thing, Steve, is that when you start to really get into apologetics and you start to broaden your understanding that your faith is something rooted in reality, it begins to open up a whole new level of understanding. And that was one of the things that happened for me, because when the atheist challenged me, it was a challenge of origins. And so what I started to do was get into origin talk. So I started on creation, evolution, and then I could subsect into different views of creation, whether it's young earth, old earth, progressive, theistic, and I forget what the other one is. But all these things started to come to mind. You started to kind of form your own opinions about things, because I don't think any of you has it 100% right. Some of the stuff, you have certain mountains to climb with every viewpoint, which is why I no longer get into arguments about certain things. There was one time I was in a apologetics Facebook group. It was like this 3-day long thread of people arguing back and forth, you know? And I remember one gentleman said, you know, it wouldn't matter how old the earth was if Christ did not die for our sins and rose again. It just wouldn't matter. He said all these questions and things, it wouldn't matter because we would still be lost in our sins. And when he said that, for me, the argument stopped. I said, you know what? We can agree to disagree and keep going from there, you know? But the thing about apologetics is that there's many different levels to it. So for you, I would love to know, what's your favorite line of defense you like to tackle in apologetics? We have presuppositional, evidential, historical, and some others. So what's your favorite line you like to kind of dig your way through, and then why do you like that particular line of apologetic defense?
Well, I guess you mentioned like evidential, presuppositional, and a few others. I guess I tend to use evidential apologetics because that's simply what I'm the most comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
I know people debate sometimes heatedly presuppositionalism versus evidentialism, but I really don't participate in that debate. For me, I just focus on what seems most appropriate in the situation. And I do, though, have a philosophy related to like the tactics that one would use when sharing their faith and when breaking out the apologetics in a conversation. And the one thing I think that you kind of hinted at or brought up a little bit when you opened this segment was the idea that some people are seeking the truth. And some people are looking to argue endlessly, and I think one of the things you can do as a beginner apologist is to focus on the big questions, the most critical questions. It frees you up from being a PhD expert in everything related to defending the faith. You can have a long conversation steeped in technical biology about human origins, or if you're a beginner, you can do the end run around that and say, well, regardless of what you think at the moment about human origins and the biology and the science behind that, what do you think about the existence of God? Because if God exists and God raised Jesus from the dead, a lot of the stuff, while important, that we talk about with origins wouldn't falsify Christianity. It may bring up some troubling problems for the Bible, but again, I think you could really get your foot in the door with that person if they were honestly seeking the truth, if you stuck to the biggest questions. And that's not to say it's not important to know the truth in all areas of the Christian worldview. It's just that so many beginners are intimidated by, things that require a lot of detailed science knowledge or a lot of detailed historical knowledge that they never step in the ring, so to speak. They never get into the batter's box and swing and get out there and share their faith. And that's, of course, a shame.
It really is, too. I know for myself, when I got into it, that was just my natural interest with that, because I'm a Trekkie, Steve. I love Star Trek, and I could almost quote every one of the original Star Trek series, because that's just my wheelhouse there. I love Star Trek.
Sure.
I love sci-fi. So for me, that was a natural thing I kind of went into, which is why I went into Origins. But for some other of my apologist friends, they wanted to discuss, whether God exists and have these discussions with atheists. We have a lay apologist that's been on the show several times. His name is Evan Minton, and he is a lay apologist who very tirelessly works and talks with atheists about these kind of questions. He has a blog dedicated towards that called Cerebral Faith. You can just Google that, Cerebral Faith, and he has a lot of interesting content on his show. He's a young man. I've known him since probably about 6-7 years now, probably a little bit longer than that even, but I've seen him grow in his defense of the faith and in different areas too. And so that's why this question of God's existence, like I like how you say, we can talk about some of these other important things, but they're not the super important things, because at the end of the day, when God exists, all the other questions kind of become answered, because you learn to trust in him, not be learning, sorry. You learn to trust in him, because he is the foundation of everything, because this is a foundation that was never created, always was. This is a foundation that stands firm. We sing that song, "On Christ the Solid Rock I Stand." There's a reason why we can stand, because it will never waver, and it will never go away, and it will never leave you. And so once you begin to understand that our whole life is in the fact that God does exist, anything else becomes, okay, I can trust God in this area. Not that we can't have these rigorous discussions about them. Not, of course not. But at the same time, we can know that if God exists, then I have a purpose. And he's going to tell me what that purpose is. And that's very important as we get into your book, Scrooge, and the question of God's existence. And so I got to know, you've always been fascinated by the story of Scrooge, and that was revealed in Peter Younghusband's interview that he did with you. But when did that fascination turn into, hey, I'm going to write a book?
Good question, and thanks for asking it. Yeah, like you said, I've always been fascinated by the radical overnight transformation of Scrooge, which is what, you know, Scrooge and the question of God's existence is, and that's what the original A Christmas Carol is as well. And then, you know, maybe what I should do before I properly answer your question is maybe give a little synopsis of what the original Christmas Carol was about, just so and anybody, it's quite possible that a good number of your listeners are unfamiliar or have forgotten over time.
Go right ahead.
All right. So the original Christmas Carol involves this character, Ebenezer Scrooge. The name Scrooge is extremely iconic, and what that icon represents is an old, cold-hearted, greedy, Christmas-hating man. And that's what Scrooge is at the onset. And his radical overnight transformation takes him from that greedy old miser into a loving, warm-hearted, Christmas-loving man who's extremely benevolent. And if that's all you knew about the story, you would write it off as Pollyannish and ridiculous. But the genius of Charles Dickens comes into play that he does the impossible, this overnight transformation of a man, so believably, and you feel it and you believe it, and it's moving, really, the way he does it. Like the psychology he employs is he just understands the heart of a person well enough to pull off this book. And that's why this book is one of the most read books in history. And specifically what happens in the course of the story is he introduces a former partner of Scrooge, Jacob Marley, who is many years deceased, and he comes back from the grave to warn him that he needs to change his greedy ways, and also to warn him that his only hope for avoiding Marley's own fate is to listen to the three visitors that he's going to get that very Christmas night. And those visitors are the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas yet to come. And they you know, as their name implies, they take him on a basically time travel type of a journey where he sees his own past and all the sadness and brokenness associated with it. You begin as a reader to understand how he became the man he became. You know, similarly, in my book, I try to sympathetically, accurately, and with heart show how an atheist might become an atheist. In The Ghost of Christmas Past, we show all the problems that are going on around him that he's, when I say we, I'm saying that incorrectly. Charles Dickens shows him all the problems that are going on in his world that he's completely oblivious to because of his own selfish nature, and opens his eyes and it breaks his heart a little bit. And then the ghost of Christmas yet to come, or the ghost of Christmas future, shows him his fate, and it shows him the implications of a life lived as a cold-hearted, greedy miser. So with that as a quick synopsis, if that was understandable, I had recently seen this performed as a play at a local university. And it occurred to me that, you know, and you can tell, hopefully, in my voice that I love this story, that however uplifting I found the overnight transformation of Scrooge, that it would be much more satisfying to me if Dickens had been able to incorporate this life-changing Christian apologetics that we've been talking about. So, you know, if you could take Dickens' story and modify it to incorporate apologetics, Christian apologetics, and have Scrooge transformed instead of a greedy miser to a benevolent Christmas lover, from a prideful, cold-hearted atheist into a owner of a reasonable Christian faith. That was really the story I most wanted to read. But it hadn't been written yet. So really I had no choice but to go and write it myself. And I didn't know at the time whether anybody would bother to read it or not. I thought maybe I'd just end up reading it to my own kids, but that was enough for me. I decided to write it.
You know, the thing about the transformation of Scrooge is that Dickens does a wonderful job making it so believable, and it's all become cliche. But when this was written, there's a reason why it was just resonated with people, that they would have an encounter like that. And one of my favorite lines, and I laugh when I say it because it's not a favorite line because it's funny. It's just the irony of it. And there's a dialogue between the collectors and Ebenezer in the actual Christmas Carol. And they ask him, hey, you want to get some money for the poor and destitute? And Ebenezer says, are there no prisons? And then the first collector is like, yeah, plenty of prisons. And the union workhouses, are they still in operation? He's like, yeah, they're still in operation. He said, well, I thought something had happened. And then he's just very disdainful of helping. And then when he has the encounter with the spirit of Christmas present, you know, Christmas present says, hey, I hope you got something for what I showed you. And then Ebenezer says, you know, is this, you know, I don't know, how can I promise you anything if I learned anything? And so then the spirit of Christmas present opens his robe and there's children there. And I'm going from the movie too. And he says, are they yours? And he says, they are man's. This boy is ignorance, this girl is want. He said, beware of them both, but most of all, beware of this boy. And I got to ask you that. I didn't put this in our questions that I sent to you before the show, but why do you think that significant part of this boy is ignorance? Why do you think that is so significant, even to your version of Scrooge and the question of God's existence? Why is that so integral to the story?
Well, That is a very good question, and I might just have to think about it a little bit.
Sure.
You know, when Scrooge starts out in the beginning, he's very prideful, as you pointed out, and you know, in the excerpts that you were quoting, and he believes what he's saying. That's part of what helps us relate to the Scrooge character. You know, no one's quite as cold as Scrooge. He's like
right.
A caricature of a real person, but
you can
relate to that caricature, and you get the sense from the dialogue that he really believes what he's saying, and he believes what he's saying, but he believes a lie. And by the time the Ghost of Christmas Present opens up his robes, shows those two destitute children and calls one of them ignorance, I think that's very poignant, because it's Scrooge who, although he believes the lies he's saying at the beginning of the book, the big problem is that he's in fact ignorant himself. And so the pain and the suffering that he sees at the feet of the Ghost of Christmas Present, he becomes culpable for, because he's a purveyor of ignorance.
Hmm.
Okay, and so he wants people that don't have enough to be in, you know, workhouses, and rather than you know being a tool of God and helping them himself, and so I think that answers the question you're asking, hopefully.
I love the part in the movie, because when the Christmas, they've done Scrooge so many times, you know, you got to, which one do you like the most? You know, you kind of get, which one do you like the most? And it's the one in black and white that I saw. I think it's the one from 1951. And when he says, are there no prisons? Are there no workouts? And he echoes and echoes, and Scrooge runs away. And he's like, you know, he gets in the bed and he has his long dressing gown on and stuff like that. That's my favorite one. And I've always loved that. Ever since I was a kid watching it, I love that one. You know, you kind of told us there are some similarities between the Scrooge of Dickens, that Dickens originally wrote and yours? How are they different? How is Scrooge of yours, obviously more modern, you know, but how are they different?
Yeah. How are they different? Well, the main thing is that in the original, Scrooge is greedy and he becomes benevolent. And in my version of the story, he's you know, full of pride in his own knowledge. And he is an atheist. He's a non-believer, and he's transformed into somebody that's humbled before his creator, and the owner of a reasonable faith. And so that's the key difference in terms of the transformation itself. You know, everything happens according to the original basic synopsis I gave you, where Marley comes in and warns him. The three ghosts all play their role, past, present, and future, but just to a different end. And so that's different. There's also, in light of the modern setting, there is a main character, an employee of Scrooge in the original, named Bob Cratchit. In the original, Bob is an employee of Scrooge, and the greedy Scrooge, of course, unsurprisingly, oppresses his employee and doesn't pay him well. That wasn't going to work in an updated version. It didn't really fit to have Bob. You know, the Scrooge wasn't greedy anymore. He was simply a pride-filled atheist. And an atheist can be as generous as the next person. It just didn't.
Right.
It wasn't a fair stereotype to continue to, you know, slap on Scrooge. So Bob Cratchit became a pastor, and the idea was, well, Scrooge needs to oppress Bob somehow. How could he do it? Well, the theme of religious liberty seemed to be a convenient enough one and a timely enough one to leverage, and so. Bob Cratchit's a preacher, a reverend, a pastor. And he's in the crosshairs of a hate speech law, which Scrooge has been behind the scenes helping to, you know, orchestrate its passage. So that's a big difference as well. The book deals with, in addition to dealing with the big questions in life, it deals with the question, you know, is freedom important? Is freedom of religion, freedom of conscience, freedom of speech, are these important things? What's at stake if we lose them? That's a big secondary theme in the book.
You know, as soon as you mention, you say we can't have it like this in modernity, because modernity, there's no way that you ever get away with that. So I like how you updated that, and that's why I kind of laugh, because the first thing that I thought of was Mr. Magoo's Christmas Carol, and, you know, Bob Cratchit is like, I'm cold. He said, well, if you work hard enough, you wouldn't have time to feel the cold, you know. He's just this miserable person, you know. That's what made me laugh a little bit as I was thinking about that. You know, I want you to read an excerpt from Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. So I know there's a poem in here, and I love people who can write poems, because I'm not quite good at that at all. Most of my poems come out very odd, so I just stopped doing it. But I would love to hear an excerpt from Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence.
Yeah, sure. So there, you know, I need to set this up just a little bit.
Please do.
So the question of God's existence, there are a number of different lines of argument, different independent lines of argument in the story, that each go to make a reasonable case that the existence of God is more likely than not. One of the most intuitive lines of reasoning is in fact an answer to the question, why is there something rather than nothing? A Christian or a theist would say, there's something rather than nothing because God created it. A non-believer or an atheist would say, something exists rather than nothing just because it does. It exists without explanation. And so it becomes a binary question at that point. You've got two options, and the question is, which is the better response? Is it more reasonable to say things exist utterly unexplained, Or is it more reasonable to demand explanations or to expect explanations for things that exist? So apologetics can put some people to sleep, and I was concerned paramount with entertaining the reader. There's many thick books written by PhDs that do an excellent job of making arguments for God's existence. I wanted something for the layman. I wanted something that was intuitive, and I wanted something that would hold the interest of the reader. So I stooped to Dr. Seuss-like rhymes to pull the reader in. And so I'm very proud of how my Dr. Seuss-like rhymes turned out. And yeah, since you've obliged me, I'm going to go ahead and read a little excerpt from this. And so again, just as a reminder, this is a poem that helps explain why it's most reasonable to believe that God is the explanation for the universe and to doubt the claim that the universe exists without any explanation at all. So here it begins. Read here the story. Perhaps you might see why explanations are necessary. Two scientists walked in the woods in the fall and spied there a pumpkin-sized translucent ball. The first scientist said, "Whatever could be the cause of this thing of such great mystery?" The second scientist replied abruptly to him, "There's no sense in asking. You're really quite dim. In truth, that odd object exists unexplained, and its reason for being is forever unnamed." Should the first scientist just accept this reply, abandon his question, and bid it goodbye? Well, the first scientist just pulled back his fist and then let it go toward the second scientist. The result was much pain, a cracked nose and black eye. The second man clutched at his face and he cried, "What explanation have you for assaulting me?" But the first shrugged and calmly said, "Why make that plea? The punch that I threw? Well, it's just unexplained, and its reason for being is forever unnamed." Now, scientist two saw the point of the first scientist. We should expect explanations for things that exist. Now, scientist two was a staunch atheist, and scientist one had a thought and he couldn't resist. Since now he had gotten his foot in the door, he decided to ask just a few questions more. What if the ball was a wee bit more grand? Would the need for an explanation still stand? Not the size it is now, but the size of a horse. Scientist two replied, "Don't be silly, of course. Size isn't the critical fact in the case. That ball could be as big as all outer space, and the need for an explanation would stand. Consistent reasoners will make that demand." "Well now," said the first man, "and this is my point, in putting your poor nose just now out of joint. Good scientists know that explanations are key. And to claim none is needed is quite contrary to doing good science and thinking that's fit. To expect explanations but then suddenly quit when the object's a universe size of a ball and its explanation, well, is God or nothing at all, is to treat explanations like just so much trash. It isn't good science. It's really quite rash. To claim that the universe is unexplained and its reason for being forever unnamed, when everything else has an explanation behind it, and the whole point of science is to go out and find it, is just an escape from what's abundantly clear. The existence of God is all that you fear." That's the end.
That was beautiful. I love how you end that the existence of God is all that you fear. And that gets right back to our point we made earlier in the broadcast, that the implications have massive ramifications. And so what we're going to do is take a quick short break. And when we get back, we're going to have Steve respond to a couple of your comments. So if you still have a chance to call in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Coe, hashtag right stuff with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We'll be right back after these messages. Stay tuned. On the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on WriteStream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Buy it. Obvious answer, no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
Friday night, Parker J and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff. Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5, The Queen here, having such a wonderful time talking to my guest, co-host, and fellow apologetic lover and lay apologist, Steve Loring. He is the author of the book Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. It's available on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. This book was so good that it got the attention of Dr. Paul Meyer, an apologist and an author of over 5 million books, including the bestseller, A Skeleton in God's Closet. And what Steve has done is taking the classic tale of Scrooge and turned it into an apologetic resource that is entertaining, thought-provoking, and full of nuggets of wisdom that you can take with you. And I wanted to ask you, Steve, before we read a couple of comments that we received from our supporters here, if a person of no faith or a person who is a skeptic or non-believer, can they enjoy your book? Or have you received feedback from people who fall into either of these categories? And what has that feedback been?
Yeah, I think they most certainly can. The book was written to be sympathetic to the unbeliever and to the person dealing with doubt, both the Scrooge character. You know, even though he's the bad guy in the story, he's also the hero of the story, and he's treated, when he is an atheist in the story, he's treated graciously by the believers that he encounters. I have had a number of I'll say agnostics give me feedback on the book, and generally speaking, they're very what they tend to focus on is the apologetics more so than anything else, and they're very I've gotten a lot of affirmation, surprisingly, in terms of the reasoning. They're like, I can't fault your reasoning, I can't fault your logic, and I'm waiting for them to tell me that they've become Christian or at least become theists. But they don't say that, but they are very complimentary of the reasoning and the logic. So at a minimum, I'm hoping I've put a stone in their shoe that they'll, you know, think about over time.
That's an important part, because sometimes all you can do is plant a seed and someone else will water it and the Lord will make it grow. And that is essential with these type of projects, especially when it comes to apologetic fiction. It is a burgeoning sect of Christian fiction, apologetic fiction. And I've had a few apologetic fiction authors on the show, and I enjoy watching them intertwine these various tomes of apologetic thought into an entertaining story, which is extremely complicated because apologetics seeks to try to answer questions that are very knotty. These are not easy questions. They're questions that people want an answer to, and necessarily they want an answer that either they can rebut or they can at least accept in some way. And those are hard. That's why a lot of apologetics are written if nonfiction, because they're trying to answer a question. But you yourself have taken this ability of using a classic story, turning it upside down, shaking it around a bit, get the parts up a little different, and here you have a book that at least can be entertaining as well as informative. And so you get your apologetics and you can eat it too. So that's what I love about Scrooge and the question of God's existence. And the few moments we have left, I would love for you to respond to a couple of comments we received from supporters of the show. Donovan from Wixom, Michigan says, without God, there is no objective right or wrong. Right is solely determined by those who are stronger physically, economically, militarily, culturally, etc. We are simply the alpha predator of the world. And Donovan responded to a question that I sent out earlier to our listeners, basically saying, you know, what's going to happen? You know, why is the existence of God, why is it such a big question? That was Donovan's response. Having heard that, Steve, how would you respond to Donovan's comment?
Well, I think he's right, and I think he's echoing what we've said. Without the existence of God, might makes right. I was just in a foreign country with my family not too long ago, and the traffic was crazy, and I asked the local, what's the law about who goes first at this intersection? And he looked at me and said, the biggest car. And he meant it as a joke. He meant it as a joke, but again, without some law that's above you and me, might makes right. The biggest car goes first, or you know, if the small car goes first, it gets squashed, right? So, I think he's right on the money.
We did get another comment from Elaine in Sherman, Texas. Elaine, thank you for your comment. Elaine says, those who do not believe in God have no reason to do anything. Good and bad is still tied to a moral compass. No God, no need for any morals. Elaine, thank you so much for that comment. Go ahead and respond to that, Steve.
Yeah, I think we all have a moral compass. Like she that's what she just said, right, Elaine?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the Bible tells us that God's moral law is written on man's heart, and we have this compass, we have this conscience that we can, you know, listen to or we can ignore at our own peril. And the fact that we have this compass, not just we, but all men, believers and non-believers, have this law written on their heart is again, it's a nice, simple evidence for the existence of God, because where does a moral law come from without a moral lawgiver?
Now, we're getting to the close to the end of our show, and thank you so much, Steve, for being with us. I do want people to know if you have other projects coming on board, so go ahead and tell us about them.
Well, the project that I'm still involved in is getting the word out about this book. I take every opportunity to talk about it and promote it. And so that really is my main focus right now. I teach apologetics every chance I get as well. And that's a passion and a joy for me to do that as well. But as far as things to promote, it's really Scrooge and the question of God's existence right now. I think about the next writing project, but I'm not actively engaged in writing the next thing right now. I feel like I haven't done due diligence getting the word out about Scrooge just yet.
If people want to connect with you online, can you give us your social media outlets?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. I've got a public page on Facebook, and if you go to Steve Luring there, you'll find me, and you'll find a big picture of the cover of this book. And so that's a good way to get a hold of me. That's probably the best way at this point.
You know, Steve, this show is always about encouraging authors to pick up a pen and use the gift that God gave them. And so in the final moments that we have left, I want you to encourage our authors out there to use that gift and pick up the pen and write.
Yeah, I would be honored to do that. You know, first of all, this is quite a show, and you're quite a host with a great passion, and your faith is it shines through, and you've obviously you know, thought about your faith and how to communicate it to others, and so thank you for that. But as far as encouraging authors, my encouragement or my suggestion is write for a purpose, and the other thing is to make it your best, and the reason I would emphasize those things is that, and you know, my humble opinion, the world is already full of what I'd call an unholy pile of unread or barely read books, and it really doesn't need any more. And while that may sound like a discouragement, you know, that was always a concern on my mind when I wrote. So I think that was my motivation to take extra time and extra care to seek feedback from, my brothers and sisters in Christ, and to pray about what I was writing about so that it would, give God glory and that it would truly reflect the best that I could do. So, in service to God, I would say just do your very best and do it with joy.
Steve, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the show. And because, you know, I love to talk about apologetics, we'll talk offline because I would love to have you back and we can kind of dig down into some of these very intricate questions, especially for yourself as a lay apologist. We can definitely take some time out and dig down to some of these deeper questions of life. So I can't wait to have you back on the show and have you back real soon. So thank you for being with us today.
Thanks. It was an honor. Thanks for your time.
And we were talking today to Steve Loring. He is the author of the book Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. If you love fiction and you love apologetics, this is the best way to get them both together. You're going to love my brother today. I encourage you to. And buy a copy of his book, Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. A world-famous apologist and author, Dr. Paul Meyer, who is the author of A Skeleton in God's Closet, gave it a wonderful, wonderful review and forward. And what Steve did is take a classic tale like Scrooge, twist it upside down, and gave us meat and gave us food for thought. That's why you want to go ahead and get your copy of this book, not tomorrow, not 2 days from now. You want to get it today. Because let me tell you, if you have questions of life, if you have friends asking you questions like, does God exist? Does it matter if he exists? Do I matter if he exists? This book will give you at least a framework for you to work with. Or maybe if you don't want to talk to them yourself, guess what? Steve did the hard work for you already. He wrote the book in an entertaining fashion. And guess what? Buy this book and give it to your friend who is asking those questions. And let them say, hey, after you read this book, let's talk about it. Maybe this book is an apologetic tool for you. You may not read, let's say, Ravi Zacharias, Jesus Among the Gods, but you may read Scrooge and the Question of God's Existence. That's why I encourage you to go ahead and get a copy of this book today. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J, and you have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day.
Follow Parker online at ParkerJCole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.